On this week's FPL Happy Hour.
Which it could have done if it was worse than it could have been a lot worse in that Liverpool Arsenal game. I mean, Liverpool's XG was like 4.3.
Shit, was it that high?
Yeah. Let me, I've
Wow.
got.
Hello and welcome to FPL Happy Hour, episode 27 of season 3, with myself, Sham, otherwise known as FPL Two Guys One Cup on Twitter.
And myself, Rob, otherwise known as FPL Panda.
Rob, how are you? Ollie's no longer at the wheel.
Well, yeah, I was going to talk about I've got a week off work, so yeah, I've had a nice day. Yeah, it's been a bit up and down weekend. Yeah, still trying to get my head around everything. I've never seen, like, in the last, well, 10 years since Ferguson left, I haven't seen a performance as bad as the one on Saturday.
Really?
I think that performance on Saturday, there was just nothing about. I think there was like a 10-minute period in the second half where we got the goal back. That 10-minute period, we were like, I thought, oh, wait a minute, here we go again. It's going to be another like win 3-2 or something like that. And then they just never built on it. I mean, credit to Watford. They were unbelievable. Like their high press they were putting on the United defence. Yeah, it was great. And it was forcing the defenders to make stupid, stupid errors. Like before the penalty, like Bruno Fernandes trying to play a ball that he normally does with his eyes closed, and then he slices it up in the air, and then like McTominay's then wrong-footed, lets who is it, Dennis, get the wrong side of him, and then like just clumsy challenge there, and it was just that was in like the first 2 or 3 minutes, and it kind of just set the tone for the rest of the afternoon. But
how do you feel with Ollie no longer there?
It's the right thing to do. I'm gutted for the bloke. Like, and I think most United fans, I've seen over sort of Twitter in the last 24 hours, like there was obviously a lot of United fans that are very heavily critical of him, especially in the last sort of 3 or 4 weeks, which was fair. But I'm not the type of person that then, like, at no point have I sort of been part of this fucking Ollie out brigade. Like, yeah, I'd always support the team and, yeah, support the coach. I was the same with Mourinho. I was the same with Van Gaal. Even though I didn't like it, I support them. But it became quite clear that, yeah, he's just out of his depth. I think the things that Ollie did in the last four years, with making the team competitive again, bringing back some of that DNA that you like to talk about with United, like got them winning games, got them into semi-finals. There was a Europa League final last year, which at the end of the day, penalty shootout, it can go either way. I mean, people at the time said, like, why has he still got De Gea in goal? Should have had Henderson. De Gea can't save penalties. Fucking saved two in 90 seconds on Saturday.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, yeah, flip of a coin things. And then with the academy, he's done great things with the academy there. There's a structure within the club now that was sort of left to rot a little bit, especially under Mourinho, who we know doesn't really, it's not part of his ethos or his philosophy, is bringing players through. It's very much like get players that are good here and now. So it was all of that. I mean, players like McTominay come through the academy and being allowed to, flourish is maybe a bit of an extreme, but he's a regular starter now, and for both club and country, which you'd argue, would he have got that opportunity if Mourinho was there? Would he be playing as much as he is now? So, yeah, lots of positives to come out of it. My worry now, as just before we started recording, is I've spoken to you about this whole interim manager thing, and I think that just shows exactly where the board with United are at the moment. They're indecisive. They could have made the decision they made on Saturday night. They could have made that 2 weeks ago after the Man City fixture and had 2 weeks of the internationals to sort it out. They could have made that decision 4 weeks ago after the Liverpool fixture and made a decision. And arguably, there was a manager there at the time that wanted the job after the Liverpool fixture. But then he wasn't available by the time we played City. But yeah, so I'm still worried. I don't think there's going to be some crazy manager bounce against Villarreal tomorrow night or against Chelsea at the weekend. I can't see us suddenly pulling a result out because the coaching staff, it's all the same. It's just going to be a worry for the rest of this season what's going to happen. And I honestly think that if results don't go well for the next two or three fixtures, I mean, Villarreal away tomorrow. We've got Chelsea at the weekend, and then we've got Arsenal a week on Thursday. If those fixtures don't go well at all, they're going to have to bring someone in. They can't have Michael Carrick and Darren Fletcher sort of leading the club forward for the next 6-7 months if the results aren't going to come. So, yeah, it's worrying.
Well, see, your club had some issues this weekend. I found out that my club aren't actually that massive. So, disappointed loss against Wolves. But yeah, okay, right. Let's crack on with tonight's show. We've had a little bit of an interlude. Right. So the agenda for this evening, we're going to be discussing two things for our hot topic. We were going to do a once to watch, but similarly to last week, a couple of the players that we like are in the players that we're going to talk about. So we thought we'd just kill two birds with one stone. We're going to choose two hot topics, and the hot topic for our choice is under 6.5 million midfielders. So, or is it midfielders or just players in general?
Midfielders. They're all midfielders.
They're all midfielders. So players that we like, there's quite a few in this range actually that I like the look of, and there's a lot of competition from at the moment. So we thought we'd look at the stats and see who's looking the best at the moment. And then the topic chosen by yourself, the Twitter public, was what was it in the end? Bad choices or bad luck? So I think this is a really good one. I really like the sound of this topic. I don't know where we're going to go with it, but I think the kind of general consensus is we're going to look at some choices and work out, was this bad decision making on our part or was it bad luck? And then going forward, trying to work out how do we decide to make correct decisions as opposed to bad ones, and how do we work out whether or not it was just bad luck or not? And I think that's a really topical discussion, actually. Right, let's start off with looking at our teams, how we did last week.
Cool. Well, let's go with you first, as we always do. So,
yeah.
There we go.
So this actually fits quite nicely into the bad decision or bad luck. So last week, I'd spoken, I think, on the pre-record and then on the live stream that I was unsure what I wanted to do. However, I was leaning towards Havertz out, Diaz out for Trent and Jota. And that was kind of the moves that I was looking at doing. It was toying between that and Son And Reguilon, and then I kind of moved towards the Jota and TAA in. But then I had a change of mind because I listened to Chelsea's press conferences and it was kind of apparent that Havertz was going to be starting. And then I was like, okay, well, I might as well go with Havertz for one more week. I don't think Jota and Trent are going to do too much damage against Arsenal with their defence at the moment. and then I was like, okay, well, if I don't do that, I'm going to have to burn the transfer because I had two free transfers. I was like, who else do I transfer in then if I don't do Havertz? Do I want to transfer out Diaz when I think they'll get a clean sheet against City? And they did. Didn't ever think that he wasn't going to start. And I was like, well, what else could I do? And I was struggling with my bench as well. And I was like, well, I've got Rafinha first sub, Livramento second sub, Brownhill third sub, and Foster. And I knew Foster was going to get an assist against United as well. So I was like,
he was nailed on for a 5-pointer, wasn't he?
Yeah. I was like, fuck it. I'm just going to use my bench boost. And you had said, really bad decision, Sham. Don't do it. Like, really bad. And I was like, kind of toying it, sleeping on it. I wasn't sure. I was making my decision late. And then I was looking at Ryan Fraser, thinking that he was going to start. And I knew that that Newcastle-Brentford game was going to have goals in it. I was like, it's going to be at least 4 or 5 goals. That was my feeling. Thinking that Fraser would start, and he doesn't start. So I transferred in. My one transfer was Brownhill to Fraser and used the bench boost. And I was okay with that Saturday night. I was looking at that going, all right, look, Foster's on 5 points. Fraser's on 4 points. Livramento at that point was on my bench and he got a point. I was like, right, okay, look, 10 points with Rafinha to play. That means if I get a return from Rafinha, 6 points or more, I'm happy with that. That is, to me, is a successful bench boost, 15, 16 points. And then Rafinha had his illness and Diaz didn't start. So basically fucked me. So I ended up getting 9 points for my bench boost, which is disappointing in the end. And the worst bit about it was, so I scored 74 points in the end with my bench boost. And had I not used my bench boost, I would have done Jota and TA in, which would have scored, I would have been on 84 points. So I would have been 10 points better off and not used my bench boost. So was that bad decision-making or bad luck? Probably bad decision-making. It was bad luck that Rafinha and Diaz didn't play. But overall, I think it was probably bad decision-making because I should have just stuck to the plan and gone Jota and TEA. But my argument for that was to try and, you know, one of the things that we've spoken about all season, and I think a lot of FPL content creators have talked about, is want and need moves. And actually, Havertz to Jota probably wasn't a need. That wasn't a need move. That was probably want move.
You'd think need move is someone that could potentially have a very high effective ownership. Like,
yeah, okay. So TAA, for example.
So TAA, that's a need move. Whilst a want move would probably be Jota because he's still relatively high.
So the thing is, I was looking at it going, okay, look, Diaz against Everton, I think he'll get a clean sheet there. And Havertz playing up top again against Leicester could get a goal also. So why take out Diaz especially when I think he's nailed on for a clean sheet for Trent? And even I think we spoke initially and I was like, I could do these two moves. What if I just did Havertz to Jota? And you were like, yeah, just do Havertz to Jota. You don't need to do Diaz to Trent.
Yeah, roll.
And roll the other one.
Yeah.
So I think it's unlucky in the end. But look, that's my bench boost use. In one way, to be honest, I'm happy I've used my bench boost because I don't need to fuck around with it. And I hate that chip. Hate that chip.
You've just got to pray. That big double game normally gets caused by the FA Cup sixth round. I think that normally causes the big double game week. You've just got to pray that that's not a high scoring double game week. Otherwise, well, there's going to be some monster bench boosts out there.
Yeah, but I can still wild card behind it, right? Like,
No, but if there's say a big double game week where a lot of teams have a similar bench and all bench boost, and all of those benches all score big points. You've got to make sure you
I'm gonna be
keeping up.
Because the other thing around this,
you can't judge whether that's a good bench boost or not until everyone's used their bench boost, really.
Well, like last season,
that's an average bench boost.
Yeah,
it's not a bad one.
It's going to be quite difficult to not beat 9 points. Would be quite difficult, right?
Yeah, I think last year I got 11 points on my bench boost.
Yeah,
and that was in a double game week. So, yeah, I mean, one, you won't know until for March time, but then you can go, oh, my bench boost wasn't so bad in the end. Or you can go, shit, I'll learn from that for the future. Or about picking the right moment, because it doesn't have to be used in a double game week. But I think that you were influenced by your appearance on Penguins Pod last week, and you sat there chatting with someone that had a bench boost that scored 28 points. And you saw
I think
that
it wasn't
happen.
Just that.
And then, I mean, it's a little bit of that. The fixtures were reasonable, but you've now got Ryan Fraser that I think is a bit of a problem in your team. And last week we spoke about the fixture schedule, and I know we spoke earlier briefly about what you're thinking of doing next. And with that fixture schedule around the corner, I think if you're not careful, you could end up making a bad decision that then leads to bad luck later on. If injuries happen and there's rotation, and because we know that there'll be rotation from who was it last week that we looked at? I think it was Liverpool, wasn't it? That they play Arsenal and Chelsea in that Christmas period, and they've got the game in the middle. I think it was Liverpool, was it Chelsea? And they've got the game in the middle against Norwich or something like that, which just seems like it's primed for a second 11. It's those sort of game, like that sort of thing, especially now that you've got to be wary of. But I think it's just a case of live and learn, isn't it? At the end of the day, you still got a green arrow out of it, so it didn't
like 1,000 places or something.
Yeah, it didn't cost you anything in rank by playing. Obviously, it's not going to cost you anything, but not making those moves didn't kill your rank in a way, which it could have done if it was worse, and it could have been a lot worse in that Liverpool Arsenal game. I mean, Liverpool's XG was 4.3.
Shit, was it that high?
Wow. I've got it on my 4.3 to Arsenal's 0.4.
Wow.
Yeah, so that just goes to show how bad it could have been for people that didn't have the likes of TAA, Jota, Salah captain. I sat there knowing that, you've got Ramsdale. He's still come out. Did he come out with 2 points in it? Or he only got the one point in the end. But I was sitting there in the first half going, fucking Ramsdale is just doing bits again. Keeping Liverpool, a lot of that was in that first half, because Arsenal was still in the game at half time, and they should have been miles away. I think the alarm bells should have been rung after the Leicester game. I think the Leicester game that a few weeks ago, Leicester v Arsenal, the scoreline covered over lots of the cracks in that Arsenal defence. And Ramsdale obviously coming out with his mega haul. There's a reason goalkeepers come out with mega hauls, and that's because they're having to do a lot, and that should then signify that this Arsenal defence isn't that great. Ramsdale probably be the only one at the moment that you'd probably consider defensively from them.
Right, let's have a look at yours then. How did you do?
It could have been worse. I could have had a blank from Ronaldo, but I managed to get an assist. And on another day, there was three or four very good chances that Ronaldo had, that he put wide or straight at Foster or headed it across the goal to give it to Van der Beek. So on another day, he outscores Salah. But yeah, maybe that was a bad decision, Captain Ronaldo. I don't think it is. I just think he was playing in a team that possibly the worst performance I've ever seen. Goita, 3 points. Rudiger, doing bits, getting a goal. I wasn't going to start Rudiger. I was actually going to, originally, I think it was Rudiger, Cancelo, Chilwell, Veltman and Tsimikas as a back four.
Yeah, because you were talking about Tsimikas and then
benching Rudiger.
Said about Robertson. Yeah.
And last minute, I brought in Rudiger. I moved Tsimikas to second bench. Now, this is where it was a bad decision. I moved Tsimikas to second bench when I thought there's a chance that he starts. Should have left him at first bench. And I would have had his points coming in instead of Smith Rowe's 2 points. So that's cost me 4 points. That little decision, just a little benching order error. Chilwell, Cancelo, who moved equal on points with TAA for this season. There's a little stat that I noticed that earlier today. Jota with his 8 points. Salah obviously didn't get the 16 points for him. I just got eight. Mbeumo with a blank. Huang with a blank. Antonio with a blank. Then yeah, Captain Ronaldo with his assist.
It didn't work out too bad in the end though for you. You got let off, I think, 8 points to 5 points, right?
Yeah, as I said, with that Liverpool Arsenal game, it could have been gone horribly wrong for me. In the end, I've come away with like a 30k green arrow, and that's probably that's mainly due to Rudiger and Jota, more or less.
If Salah did go off, I don't think that would have been a bad decision, to be honest with you, Rob.
Oh no, I don't think. The Ronaldo one was a bad decision. I think it was just bad luck.
So, do you have a plan to get in Trent here? Or are you waiting until your wild card?
I'm probably going to have to wait until a wild card because I don't want to take any hits. And the only move that I can do to bring Trent in this week would be Cancelo to Trent. That would be silly, really. So
you don't want to take a minus four?
Not two game weeks before my wild card.
Okay.
I just think I kind of have to just ride that out. And I said when I made the move, and we'll talk about it in the bad decisions, bad luck chat. When I made the move, I had to stick by it because it was always going to be hard to come back to him until I wild carded. And I know that there was a moment, around game week 8 or game week 9 where I almost pressed the button on the wild card and he would have come back in there and then. Now it's kind of like with Livermento. Now he's 4.5.
Mm-hmm.
I could easily go Veltman to Livermento, but I'm like, I've lost out on four price rises from the guy. Would I just be trying to chase the returns that he got a few weeks ago rather than looking at Southampton and going, they're not going to keep clean sheets week in, week out. Livermore is not going to return week in, week out. And we saw that at the weekend against Norwich. This Southampton team went onto a nice little patch of form. Livermore made the most out of it points wise, but it's still Southampton. So if I if I bought him at 4.1, yeah, I'd keep him, but I wouldn't be going and buying him at 4.5 when there's like I could have a look around and maybe find someone better for around the same price where I might potentially get my own value out of it. So yeah, okay. It's I mean, at the move I should have made at the time was Tsimikas to Livramento, like every other fucker did, because Tsimikas, until that week that everyone made that move, since then is probably when Livramento has done really well. Tsimikas hasn't played a minute, and then this week Livramento blanks and Tsimikas actually plays and comes out with a clean sheet. Swings and roundabouts and that. But hey ho, we move on. Looking forward to that wild card. I've told myself staying around sort of around the 200 to 300-400k mark is a must. And that wild card should then, over the course of sort of game week 15, 16, 17, hopefully be able to push me into the five-figure ranks, sort of sub 100k. So, yeah, sticking with the plan at the moment.
Okie doke. Right, well, let's move on then to our hot topic, which is midfielders under 6.5 million. And I think this is quite apt at the moment because most teams need at least one of these, probably two, maybe one a bit lower than 6.5, but one definitely around this mark. And over the last few weeks, we've spoken about a couple of these players. We've gone through stats with some of them. We've gone through stats for Trossard and Benrahma and Smith Rowe recently. So we haven't got them covered on this graphic here. So we thought we'd go through other players that people are talking about. So we're looking at Conor Gallagher, Maxwell Cornet, Saar, Jared Bowen, and is that Trincão?
Yes, it is. It's Trincão. I was like sitting here going, is he going to be able to do it like you did? Who is it? Brentford a few weeks ago, where I didn't even tell you who I've got. I just put the pictures up and let you guess. But yeah, well done.
Yeah.
You got them all
quick. Well, I was thinking, who else is around 5.7 million, 0.4% owed? That's a Watford midfielder. So yes, those are the players that we're looking at. All under 6.5 and all between 5.7 and 6.4 million. So this will give you an idea of the players. From here, there's three players that I really like the look of. And that's just based on kind of eye test and what I know, not necessarily for moves right now, but definitely that you need to keep eye on in the next kind of 5 weeks. And that's Conor Gallagher, Cornet and Bowen. And I really wanted Cornet this week. I was going to move to him, but I was 0.1 short. So I was going to do Brownhill to Cornet, and that's how I would have brought in. But I was 0.1 short of that move. What's your thoughts on these players, Rob?
I'm very, very much the same with my thoughts. I mean, I included Trincão because he's one of the highest for XG in this sort of in the sub 6.5 million midfielders range. But so are the rest of these. Obviously, Saar, penalty. Well, not sure if he's still going to be the penalty taker at Watford after missing two. But we'll say that he is for now. And I mean, again, like, how many times are we going to see Watford pull out performances like they did on Saturday? I reckon we'll be able to count it on like one hand. I don't think we'll see that every week, and we won't see them come up against teams performing as badly every week. So with Trincão as well, I mean, there's a question mark over his minutes. He's obviously still very young, but he's in the time that he has played, he he has shown like quick feet and that he will be a great asset at some point, whether it's this season or whether it's in a future season with Wolves. So, but it's just, it's good to see. I mean, if he does start playing more minutes, then yeah, he could become an asset that if he stays at sort of that 5.7 million, sort of sub 6 million, but and is playing more, he could easily be sort of your fifth midfielder that you just sort of have sitting there that you can call upon for stuff like your bench boost and things like that.
Yep.
So, well, should we go on to we'll go on to Conor Gallagher first, because he's obviously the standout amongst these five at the moment. A Palace team that are flying in the league, and he's obviously, he's, as we said last week, he's sort of this talisman of this Palace team. When we were talking about Zaha last week, Conor Gallagher's kind of taken a bit of weight off of his shoulders in the middle of the park. Very much the creative spark in that Palace centre midfield at the moment. 67 points so far this season, 6.3 points per 90, which is insane. Impressive. For a £6 million midfielder, that is crazy. So, I mean, he's got the best value for money out of all of them. He scored four times. Like Sarr and Corne have got five at the moment, but yeah, Gallagher's got four. He's got three assists so far. 24 shots he's taken. He takes about 2.5 shots per 90, of which 11 of them are on target. 45.8% of his shots are on target. And then this is the stats that set him far away from the other four. 50 shot creating actions at 4.7 shot creating actions per 90. The closest to him of that is Bowen. And like a lot of people have been going, talking about Jarrod Bowen the last few weeks. But yeah, I mean, Gallagher's just blowing that out of the park. And then goal creating actions per 90 is 0.9. Where he's had 10 over the course of the season, which again is more than anyone else. The only thing, his non-penalty XG isn't great. Now, yeah, will that get higher as we move forward into the season? I mean, he's performing better than his XG, so we'd expect that expected goals to creep up and hopefully, well, you'd expect it to overtake, but he's, yeah, outperforming that XG at the moment. And his XA of 2.6 is the highest out of all of these. And you have to say that he is one of the most creative players, and it probably helps with the quality that he has in front of him, which we spoke about last week with the likes of Edouard Benteke, who's like found this new lease of life. Picked up a brace at the weekend, and we know that like Benteke on his day, I mean, what, 4 years ago, he was starting up front for Belgium, wasn't he? He was keeping Lukaku out of the Belgian side 4 or 5 years ago.
Yep.
So
people laugh at Benteke. I think we said it. I said it on the pod, didn't I? On the live stream on the weekend. People laugh at Benteke, but he's decent.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe it was just a case of he needed those players behind him that can create the chances for him. But yeah, so that obviously gives Gallagher more scope for getting more points through assists. And he's even taking more of the set pieces now, which seem to have, like, at the start of the season, he was taking them all. Then Milivojević came back, and then he started taking them, and now Gallagher's getting a few of them again. So yeah, he's definitely the standout option here. He is owned now by 23.7%. Well, that was at 5 o'clock this evening. It could be even more now. So yeah, he's getting in that that point where you like kind of need to think about getting him in. Mm-hmm. Purely a case of, yeah, when he does return, he's never going to be like a huge effective ownership, but it's going to cost you a bit if you don't own him.
Fixture is good as well. So between 13 and 20, Palace have got Villa, Leeds, United, Everton, Southampton, Watford, Tottenham, Norwich. Good run.
Yeah, out of the 20 sides, I think they're like on my FDR, I think they're like sixth or seventh for like their average fixture rating for the next five or six fixtures. So, yeah. Reasonable fixture run going in, and knowing that there's players like Gallagher that they're cheap and easy to bring in, and you don't have to start them every week. With Gallagher, Gallagher's probably one that you might have to, but there's other players there that we know coming back in, Eze, Elise, players like that, that you could also, if you wanted to go a bit differential, and yeah, when they return and fully fit and firing, they're going to get minutes over the next month. Yeah, that's another way of tapping into it. But at the moment, yeah, Gallagher's the standout, or Benteke, if you wanted a differential up front to gamble on.
Next, I think, up, with these players, it really it depends on when you want to go for them. I think they're all good moves. Any of them are good, and it depends what suits your team and when you need to make the moves or when you want to make the moves. So, for example, for you, Rob, where you're doing your wild card in 16, I actually think out of these, Bowen's probably best.
Bowen's someone that I'm just keeping an eye on that price tag, though. Like, I think once we get past the, if he gets past like 6.5,
then, I don't think he will. Not now. Like, I can't see him going up until game week 16.
Yeah, I mean, if he did go up, then there's other options out there as well.
Yeah, agreed.
Because then he's priced sort of the same as the likes of Smith Rowe.
Smith Rowe is cheaper, right?
And it's just there'll be players there that I'll be like, oh, would I actually prefer to go there? Like Gallagher, like, would I rather have, if Bowen's at 6.6 and Gallagher's at 6.1, 6.2, I'd probably take Gallagher over Bowen. But it all depends on what I want to do with that wild card. I mean, a lot of these players are players that people are going to be downgrading their midfield to, or looking to upgrade the likes of Mbeumo, looking for just a cheap upgrade that they can pick up some fixtures, get some odd points here and there, and be able to bench them as and when needed. Yeah, it'll be either that Mbeumo upgrade, or it'll be the downgrade from the likes of Havertz, Mount, to free up that money to bring in this defence that it's pretty much TAA, Cancelo, Chilwell, James plus one is what a lot of people are now looking at going. It might, to be able to achieve that, you might need to take your Havertz or your Mason Mount or one of your other sort of mid-price midfielders and turn them into one of these, just to stick an extra couple of million in the bank to upgrade your players, which, I mean, it's something that I'm having to think about at the moment, even though my midfield's already fairly bare. It's Salah, Jota, and not much else after that. It's interesting to look at. Right, next up, Maxwell Cornet, who has made an impressive start at Burnley, playing out of position a lot of the time, playing as a forward, he's almost changing the identity of the way Burnley go forward with the ball. At times, you could even say they're exciting to watch. They're scoring goals, which, like, they're not winning games 1-0 or anything. They're scoring goals. I mean, it's obviously affecting them defensively. Like, they're conceding a lot more than they used to. Like, in past seasons, you'd expect them, to win, to score, and then shut up shop. And now they seem to score and then want another goal, which, is unheard of for this Burnley side. But Maxwell Cornet is very much part of that transformation. He's only got 40 points this season so far, but obviously he didn't sign until game week three. But he does, so he does average 7.1 points per 90. Five goals so far this season. He's only taken 10 shots, which is disappointing, under two per game. But eight of them have been on target. So 80% of his shots have been on target, which is nice to see. XG of 1.4, there you go. He scored five goals and his XG is 1.4. So it just shows that he's making goals out of nothing at times with Burnley. I mean, you look at that Burnley side and you can't really say it's the most creative of teams in the Premier League. He's always going to be more or less trying to make the opportunities for himself rather than someone playing him a neat ball or whatever. So I think he's at 6.1, he's worth investing in. I think it's similar to what I've said about Bowen. I think if he continues to rise, I mean, his ownership's only 2.3%, but say if it went to 5% before deadline, like if he went to 5% on Thursday, you'd expect to rise from him on Friday. And normally when cheap players score, people buy them, don't they? So you'd think that his ownership could increase by 200%. Not 200%, by 100% by the deadline. At which point you'd think then that will trigger a rise in him. And I'm not sure once he gets past again that 6.5 million mark. Whether he's good value or whether I'd be wanting to go back into to Gallagher, who seems to, I mean, he'll get another rise this week because he'll continue to get owners, but it'd still be cheaper. What am I talking about? Cornet 6.1, Gallagher 6, so you'd expect them to almost move up together. If I can save 0.1, I'd probably go Gallagher over Cornet.
Okay. Who's next? Saar? We've spoken about Saar?
Spoken about Saar. So, Bowen, you give me your thoughts on Bowen from your eye test, and then we'll have a look at the numbers.
At the moment, the way that we're playing, he seems to be involved in everything. On the Wolves game, I only caught the highlights. I didn't watch the match in full, but from the highlights, like, there was at least one chance where he should have scored, and it felt like he was in and around everything. I think as a side, we had 9 shots and he got 3 of them. None on target, but he got 3 of the shots, and he seems to be shooting more. He seems to be in and around it more than maybe 6 to 8 weeks ago. And so if there was a midfielder I would choose, with a good run of that's game week 16 or 18 run, whichever way you look at it, I'm almost definitely having Bowen in the side. And we know that when Antonio needs a rest, Bowen will play up top. Bowen's quite energetic and fit. Like, he worked on his fitness throughout the summer. Like, we know reports that he was kind of there at training and go work on after hours, getting in early to work on his fitness. And we know also that during the beginning of our Europa League games, where Antonio wasn't starting, so I think the first two games Antonio didn't start, or two of the three Antonio didn't start, and Bowen played up top, and then he played on the weekend as well. So we know that his fitness is good enough for him to play consecutive games, and he doesn't really get rested that much. So out of this lot, if I was moving now, it would probably be Gallagher or Cornet if I was moving now. However, in a few weeks' time, it will probably change, and it's likely to be Bowen. Even from game week 16, if you want someone for like a few game week run, I think Saar's a good option. Between 16 and 19, Watford play Brentford, Burnley, Palace and Wolves. Good little run. But it depends what you want for your side, right? But almost definitely, it's probably going to be Bowen for me, based from an eye test point of view.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned about how much he's shooting. 30 shots he's taken this season, 2.6 per 90, both the highest out of these five. He's scoring 5 points per 90, playing for a West Ham side that, are in the running for a Champions League spot this season. If not, they're definitely going to be in. I think there's almost no doubt that they should be in Europe for a second season next year. You'd be massively disappointed if they didn't make it, get a European spot for next year, whether albeit through the league or through winning the Europa League. It's a West Ham side that you'd think should get better once the European football stops and they can get the odd midweek off, because there hasn't been that so far. His shot creating actions, 43 at 3.8 per 90. It's the second highest of all of these. Gallagher's miles ahead of him, but he's miles ahead of the other three. His XA of 2.3, 0.2 assists per 90, it's again reasonably good. What you said about him taking lots of shots and being involved in the attacks more, I think you saw it very much in the Liverpool game, where West Ham were playing this deep counter, and the ball would get played into Antonio, and like Antonio's taking his touch, Bowen's past him. He just flies up there. And that happens, like, when you see it once, you then notice it happens all the time with this West Ham side, that he's always looking to get ahead of Antonio and provide that support. So playing almost a sort of just a very attacking number 10. More or less. And you'd argue he's probably got that free role. I mean, towards the end of last season, we saw Lingard in that same sort of role, getting sort of ahead of Antonio at times. And Bowen's kind of taken that on to do that himself. And like we looked at, saw the returns Lingard got last season, Bowen's doing something similar himself. So, he's obviously, if you want your way into the West Ham midfield, he could be, or an alternative to Antonio. Because Antonio, I know you're still very confident on him, but he scored twice in the league, and they were in August, which was a long time ago now. I've had other moves that I've had to make, but this week it's actually something I'm thinking about.
If it's for 3 weeks, in your position where you've got a wild card, I don't think that's a bad move.
It's just knowing where I'm going to go from that. I can go up. I've got a couple of million in the bank, But yeah, it's knowing what I'm going to do with that. Do I move him out and then use that money to upgrade one of my lower midfielders, or use that money, move him down, move Hwang up a little bit into like role. So yeah, it's I think it's nice to know that, yeah, you can. I think from my wild card, I don't have. There's the option there not to. I don't have to go back to Antonio if I do sell him. I could just go with Bowen at, if he's at 6.4, 6.5. He's a great option in 3 game weeks time. And like you say, there'll be times when Antonio will need to rest, and it's very likely he'll be playing OOP at times over that Christmas period. So yeah, it's probably
Just
a
to put
punt
it
that
in
I might take.
perspective, just to put it in perspective, where obviously these stats are based over the course of the season. If and I've just checked it now, between game weeks 1 and 6, Bowen had 5, 9, 11, 13 shots. Okay, between 7 and 12. So the last six, so the first six was 12 and the last six was 21. If we look at shots on target, between 1 and 6, he got 3, 5 shots on target, and in the last six is 9 shots on target. So he's getting, like I said, from an eye test point of view, he's getting more involved in taking more shots, whereas the first few weeks of the season, where Antonio was kind of very high on the stats and his XG and XA was like one of the best in the league, it's now Bowen that's kind of getting in behind and taking more shots. So actually, I think if you were to do it based over the last 6 game weeks from these stats, I think Bowen would maybe be beating Gallagher.
Interesting. And you'd argue, I mean, although Palace fans might argue, West Ham are considerably better side, but there's times this season when I'm not so sure. Like look at Palace sort of over the last 3 or 4 weeks, and maybe look at West Ham on Saturday, and you if you looked at the two, you go, oh, Palace at if you looked at sort of them both in isolation, you'd go, oh, Palace are probably having a better season than West Ham.
Season.
But yeah, but you'd like over obviously over the whole season, yeah, West Ham are the better side. But I mean, time will tell, really, won't it? Yeah, will the European football in the end, at some point, David Moyes is going to have to make a choice. Like he's rotated a lot in Europe, and been able to because of the strength of the group in the Europa League. But going into the knockout stages, he's going to have to make a decision there, because you're going to come up against good teams, and you're going to have to put your first 11 out, because it's a like for yeah,
Competitive.
and well, it's at the end of the day, it's a European trophy. Like what would you take finishing 10th in the league and winning the Europa League?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. I'd take finishing 17th and winning Europa League to
Take
get
eight.
Champions League next year
Yeah, take
and a
what
trophy.
about take 18th playing in the championship
No,
and
I don't know about that. Could you imagine playing in the championship and the Champions League?
You
Fucking
wouldn't
hell.
lose any players though,
I
would
don't
you?
think
You'd get relegated, but you wouldn't
we've
lose
had
any players.
yeah we've had Pete, is it happened once or twice.
Wigan.
We've had Europa League and Championship, haven't we? We haven't had Champions League though.
Wigan,
Was it
Wigan
Wigan?
and Portsmouth.
Interesting. Yeah,
Because
we haven't
it
had
was
Champions League, but that was Europa League, wasn't it?
Wigan, Portsmouth, obviously they won the FA Cup. Right. Harry's greatest day when he won the FA Cup for Portsmouth. And then Wigan, they
They beat Man City, right? In the
Oh, actually, yeah,
Didn't they beat Man City in the FA Cup?
Wigan beat Man City, yeah. And yeah, they got that was the year that they got relegated. But yeah, and then I think they did go out of the, they had to qualify though, because
early on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like whilst I think if someone like Man City, United, Liverpool, if they didn't make a European spot but won the FA Cup, I don't think they'd have to qualify because of their coefficient rankings and stuff. Whilst Wigan, I think they had to go through two or three qualifying stages because they'd never been in Europe before. So you never know. You could finish 10th, and because at some point Moyes is going to have to make that decision. I don't know what that does for West Ham players as FPL assets, though. if they're all being rested in the league and Moyes has gone full throttle on Europa League. But that's a conversation to be had in February, I think.
Right. Anything else from any of these other players?
No, I think the standouts are obviously Gallagher, Corne and Bowen here. I think
depending on what your team structure is like and when you're looking to make these moves depends on who you get.
Yeah, I think all three of them are great options. You could argue that you could have two of the three going into your team because I think you will get a bit of value out of them as well. Those that are on their wild card might look to bring, like on a wild card like myself in the next couple of weeks, might look to bring a couple in on the wild card. Those that are not on the wild card might look at someone like Gallagher as someone that, wait a minute, if I keep hold of him, by the time I use my second wild card in February time, sort of in 10, 15 game weeks, I could potentially have made $500,000 to $1 million in value from him. So he could be a great one to have. Although, yeah, it needs his ownership to sort of increase to sort of between 30 and 40% and then stay there. So he needs to avoid injuries. And yeah, then he, like very much like how we've seen with Livramento, he's been going up by at least 0.1. I think during the international break, he went up by 0.2. So like, yeah, we'll see that with Gallagher. I think we'll see him go up by to, I think he's probably due a rise tonight, Monday night. He might go up again later in the week. And then we might see that if he continues to return, that happening. So he might be the one that sort of the sooner rather than later, before you get sort of end up being priced out from the value point of view.
Okay, right. So that's that hot topic done. Let us move on to our next one, which is bad decisions versus bad luck. And I guess the best way to start this one off, Rob, is let's define, or try to define, because it is quite difficult, what the difference is between a bad decision and bad luck. How would you define it? So if I was to say to you, what's the difference between bad decision making and bad luck, how would you describe it?
I think bad decision is when you've made a decision that you can't back up with multiple, whether it be statistics, whether it be your eye test, but you can't back up with multiple sources. So if it's an eye test, yeah. If you're going by the eye test, it's not only your eye test, but listening to the pundits on the TV, other podcasts who might have said, "Oh, I like the look of this person." So it's not going, because your eye test may be biased compared to someone else's eye test. So it's, if you're going by an eye test, using several eye tests, and then with stats, it's using the same stats for everyone, because otherwise you end up having a statistical bias, and you're looking at the stats that who you're looking at performs well in, and you're not looking at anything else.
Would you add fixtures in there as well?
Yeah, you're not going to, someone might have.
So just as an example, Son and Kane, yeah, at the moment, there is no eye test and there is no statistics to back up bringing them in. Hmm. Right, at the moment, or pre-game week 11, like for the Leeds game, if we were bringing in Son and Kane and they don't perform over this period, I don't necessarily think, well, would you say that was a bad decision or would you say that was bad luck?
I think it's a bit of both in the case of Son and Kane. Because there's been nothing from this Spurs side since August that has told me that those two players are going to suddenly explode with goals. And this is why I didn't really panic at all about like seeing lots of people bringing in the likes of Kane and Son. I didn't panic at all about it. Like, I knew this, yeah, they will probably win, but I couldn't see them going crazy against Leeds. So because how we've seen this Spurs side play, and we, like, I still stand by the fact that we won't see Kane get any big returns until they sign a creative number 10, because he drops too deep in this side. And I've always said, if I'm going between the two of them at the moment, it would have to be Son.
Okay, so what's bad luck then compared to bad decision? So bad decision making is where you need various statistical or fixtures or eye tests or something to back up a decision. And then what's bad luck then?
So bad luck is, obviously, the obvious one is an injury happening. Unexpected rotation. So like for you, Diaz, in the last week, unexpected rotation there. So that would be bad luck. If he's not having a spin on Pep's roulette wheel, then he comes away with a 6-pointer, maybe more through bonus as well. You don't know. So I'd say that's obviously the main thing with bad luck. And then there's other things where the stats would point to a player doing something, and then it not happening. And the prime example for that would be Kai Havertz in game week 9. The stats pointed towards Chelsea making lots of chances, Norwich conceding
scoring lots of goals.
Norwich conceding lots of chances, and you're picking a player that statistically has performed well as a goal scoring player for Chelsea in Kai Havertz. So that move, it makes sense. I mean, for some people, that's bad luck. Like for yourself, that was bad luck because you did it. You did it for free. You didn't take a hit to do it, did you?
No, I did not do it for a hit.
Now, so for you, that was bad luck. For a person that took a hit to do it, I think it was a bad decision.
Okay. I think that's quite a good, explanation of the difference. So before we move on to kind of examples of both of us, how, you know, going through the season and working out whether or not we've made a bad decision or was it bad luck, what can we do as FPL managers to, I guess, making bad decisions? Like what needs to kind of be thought about during that process?
So the way I try and deal with it, now this is personally, some people it might not work for, some it might. I'll look at who I want to move out of my team. Like, who in my team is an issue? If there's no issues, then it's a roll the transfer. If there's someone that, or then if there's no issues that week, I might then look, right, who I might set up my team and then go, right, who have I got on my bench this week that is costing me money then being there when I could have someone else for the same money that I could potentially play next week or the week after over this person. And then if there's still no one, then yeah, it's roll them transfer. And then so
Where
I did.
does gut feel come into this?
I think there's obviously that like space for it. Like say Man United against Liverpool, or say Man United versus Man City last season. Man City top of the league, and they were, what were they? They were like 15 points ahead. They were at home against United, and yeah, that week saw lots of people transferring players out. I ended up still having Luke Shaw in my team. Then he went and scored and a clean sheet in the haul. But that was like a gut feel of, I think it's a derby. I could, like, I don't think it's going to be a 3-4-0 to Man City.
Whereas if that didn't pay off, that would have been classed as a bad decision.
Oh yeah, it would have been a bad decision.
Yeah.
I think it's okay to have some, use like some of your gut feel, but you, I think you kind of need to back it up somewhere.
Yeah.
Like you can't just go, oh, I think Man United will beat Chelsea this week, or the other way, oh, Chelsea will beat Man United this week. What is there to back that up? And I, like, if we look at the stats for Man United and look at the stats for Chelsea, that shows that Chelsea should win next weekend. So you go, you kind of have to back it up. Like you can't ever just go on a feeling, because
I disagree.
yeah, but your fear, like your feeling, will have all sorts of bias involved in it, whether you like
Yeah.
you say it or not. Like, yeah, City versus Everton. I fancy Everton to maybe like not roll over as much as I did, but that's probably my bias towards not liking Man City. So yeah,
I guess the thing
and
is,
like you, I mean, you've said that you think that West Ham can get a result against City and
City and
against
Chelsea.
Chelsea in the next couple of weeks. Is that maybe a little bit of bias towards
Probably
West Ham? Exactly.
being
Although
massive and also massive.
yeah, but I sat here last week and went, after the Liverpool performance, I went, yeah, why not? There's no reason you can't get that result. But the way that City are playing at the moment and the way Chelsea are playing, the stats and everything probably point to, yeah, that gut feeling not being backed up with anything.
Okay, right. So let's look at some decisions. Have you got any decisions in mind that we'll maybe go through each of us and maybe pick out a couple of decisions that we've made this season and try and work out, was that a bad decision or bad luck?
So my main big decision I made this season that was a bad decision was game week 7, when I did TAA to Rudiger and I did Traore to Mount. Now at the time I could have kept TAA. I could have still done the Mount move. Like there was nothing. Like I could still say that Mount move, it doesn't affect what the events of game week 9, for example. But coming off TAA and going to Rudiger, I think it was more of out of fear, seeing that Chelsea run of fixtures back from game week 7 up till now, and seeing lots of people going on to Rudiger. I could have probably done, at the time, Soufal, I owned him at the time, could have done him to Rudiger, made exactly the same other moves. And then since I've made that move off of TAA in game week 7, he scored 45 points. 45 points. And I could have done Soufal instead. How many points has Soufal scored since game week 7?
Zero, probably.
I think it's four.
Four.
So there's, that's obviously, that's a bad decision that I've made. But I knew at the time it was a gamble to make that decision. But I wanted that flexibility of having some money. But now I'm sitting here with a couple of million in the bank and going, like, I could have TAA still in my team with no money in the bank, and I would have probably have had to have adjusted a move here or there. Like, I probably wouldn't have then done Mount to Smith Rowe. I would have maybe gone Mount to someone cheaper. And it's, yeah, it's just left me with, I think generally that decision was better. And then, like, when was it, last week, not following through with the logic for picking my goalkeepers, knowing that the Brighton defence, I shouldn't have so much confidence in it. And yeah, picking Veltman and Sanchez against Newcastle might not have been the best idea. And I should have gone Gaeta instead. And so it ended up being a 7-point swing there.
Any decisions that you made that you think are bad luck, that had all the right logic, had all the right kind of stuff behind it, but it was just pure bad luck?
Barnes to Traore, game week 4. Because the logic was there. Traore was playing. He was creating lots of chances at the time. And this was, he was taking lots of shots. He was doing everything that an attacker for Wolves needed to be doing, but he wasn't hitting, like, wasn't able to hit the target. And everything said, yeah, he's going to, at some point, he will do it. I think at the time, back in game week 3, this before they brought in Hwang, and so they were still playing very much a 4-3-3 at the time, with Traore on the right wing. Then they brought in Hwang, and their formations changed a little bit since then. Now he's out of the team. But yeah,
do you think bad luck has to be associated with kind of a negative points when we're talking about FPL? So what I mean is, Barnes to Traore move didn't cost you any points, right? Because Barnes didn't perform after that. He was out of the side. So whilst it was bad luck that you didn't get anything from Traore, you didn't miss out on points from Barnes. But so do you think, yeah,
I could have spent that money somewhere else and got points.
Yeah, okay.
So no, that's, I mean, that's, it could be, you could drop that in, like, the bad decision bit. Tony to Bamford in game week 5, bad luck. That's definite bad luck, because I bought in Bamford. Leeds had a nice little run of fixtures. Gets an assist in the first game. I think he had a goal disallowed as well. Then he got injured and he's been out since. Now that was, that was definite bad luck with Bamford. Because just the fixtures were there. We knew the stats were there. Yeah, he was getting great. He had Rafinha creating him lots of chances, etc., etc. I think in that week I had the choice to go from one of my midfield. I think it was Traore, actually, to Rafinha, or it was Tony to Bamford. And I did the Tony to Bamford move. And on top of that, in that week, in game week 5, Tony hauled, which just made it even worse. So, yeah, that was all bad luck, I think, there. Because I made the right moves. If I had to run that build up to game week 5 again, I would not change that move. I think I'd do that move all the time, because Tony wasn't showing anything of what we expected. Bamford looked like the go-to option. And then he got a 5-pointer and then got injured. So yeah, that was pure bad luck there. But other than that, I think, like, looking at the transfers I've made this season, in general, have all been, I think I've justified myself in most of them. I definitely, I think I've made what, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14 transfers so far this season. And I think I'm justified in all of them, apart from that Barnes Traore and Alexander Arnold to Rudiger. And even then, Rudiger's, like, in that time, TAA scored 45 points. Rudiger's probably scored about 30 odd at least. So it's not all bad.
Yeah. I think for me, I've picked out kind of three or four decisions that I've made and tried to work out whether or not they're bad decisions or bad luck. If we go in chronological order, so obviously the first one was game week 4, not bringing in Ronaldo. His haul against Newcastle when everyone was bringing him in, and then he hauled. And then after that, I brought in Bamford and Rafinha and took out Tony before his haul. And then I bought in Ronaldo the following week. So Ronaldo scored against Newcastle, and then I think it was Watford. Was it Watford? No, it wasn't Watford. I can't remember. He scored against someone straight afterwards. It was against West Ham, actually. And then I brought in Ronaldo after that, and he blanked. And then he blanked against Everton, because obviously he didn't start and came on for the last 30 minutes.
Missed the penalty against Villa.
Yeah, and I had him captain, I think, against Everton. And then I wildcarded after that. So I think it started, I think that the second bit where bringing him in and didn't kind of perform was maybe bad luck. But the first bit was bad decision making with not bringing him in the first place. And if I brought him in the first place, then that second move wouldn't have been a problem. And then of the biggest one for me, the biggest decision I would say this season that has, you know, defined my season so far, has got to be the Havertz week when on the wild card I brought him in, and he, I captained him against Norwich using the stats, thinking he's playing number 9, Chelsea are going to score loads of goals. And they did score loads of goals. And then 7 goals, he didn't get a single return. And he was the only player in the starting 11 that did not return. I think that's bad luck. And then Salah goes on to score a hat-trick against United, the first player to do so in, I don't know, a long time. And they win 5-0. I think that is bad luck. And I think the next biggest decision, so that kind of brought me from 40k to 220k. And then I've made decisions after that that were good decisions and kind of brought me back up to around 45k. And then the decision this game week of not bringing in Jota and TAA instead of kind of Diaz and Havertz cost me 20 odd points. And then bench boosting. So I've used my bench boost chip. That was probably a bad decision, but it was bad luck that Diaz and Rafinha didn't start or didn't feature. So I think it can kind of be a mixture of both. And I think what I've learned is, I think gut does have something to do with it. I think you can make decisions based on your gut. However, you need, and you can make them based on pure gut if you've got nothing else to back them up. However, bear in mind that if it goes wrong, that's going to be down to a bad decision rather than bad luck.
Yeah, I think if you make any decisions that are on your gut and your gut alone, I think you have to own that decision. Because there's nothing else to blame it on. You can't blame it on the stats. You can't blame it on the podcast you've listened to. You can't blame it on the Twitter timeline. You own that decision because you made that decision. And this is why I don't like making gut decisions. I like to, I said earlier, pick out 3 or 4 players that I want, instead of a player that's causing me a problem, and then work through, look at the stats, look at what other people were saying about that player, look at comparing these players, and then then finally bringing that player in. Like, there's lots of different factors. Like, are you getting the right value for the player is a factor that you need to bring into it. And if you go through all of those stages and then it doesn't go well for you, then it's always going to be bad luck. Like, because you've done everything you can to try and take the luck out of the equation. And so if it doesn't go correctly for you, it's going to be bad luck. If that makes sense.
Yep, makes sense.
Because you've taken every, I think it's essentially, you've taken every variance of analysis of that player to make that decision, where it gets to the point where you cannot see any reason not to get that player. Then yeah, it's always going to be bad luck if it goes wrong, which was, I think, and for what, 30% of the game, I think it was, that brought in Havertz that week. You can put it down to bad luck if you did it for free and it didn't cost you anything. But then there was other people that I think it was a bad decision, because they might have ripped up their plans. They might have wildcarded early. I saw a lot of people wildcarding early because of what happened with Havertz. And yeah, has that affected them negatively? And is it continuing to affect them negatively now? Because then there's always the bias. Because when that fixture happens again later in the season and Lukaku gets injured the week before and Havertz seems like a standout option again, people are going to go, people that were burnt by it and see it as, that took hits and they see it as a bad luck rather than a bad decision, they'll be the ones that turn, oh no, I'm not doing that. That's when he goes.
Well, I'm never buying Havertz this season again.
If that same scenario happened and it was right for my team at that time, I'd do it 100%.
I'm not buying Havertz again this season. Fuck that shit.
We'll have a look. We'll see who Salah's playing that week. Imagine if Liverpool played City and Chelsea are playing Norwich and Lukaku and Werner got injured the week before again. You bring in Havertz and captain him all day.
I don't know if I could again.
I would. I'm not captaining Salah against City. That's the one game week I've done. I'm definitely not captaining Salah. So
right. Anything else to add on this subject?
No. Own your decisions.
Own your decisions. Yeah, right. Okay. Let's have a quick look for next game week and initial thoughts on moves. Are we going to you first? Right, what's your thoughts? Early decisions.
So I've got 2 million in the bank. At the moment, it'll probably be Antonio out. Like the next three fixtures, they've got City and Chelsea wedged in. You've got Brighton away as well. I think it's a good time to get Antonio out of there. It's just where I'd move him to. And it's more or less a sort of a 2 week punt on where I go to. Now I could go with Raul and go Huang and Jimenez up top, knowing that Norwich and Burnley are the next two fixtures for Wolves, which looks appealing. Other than that, Vardy, I could get to against Watford at home, but I'm not too sure about Leicester at the moment. Benteke. So I think at the moment.
I like the Jimenez and Wang double up.
Yeah, that, I mean, that is my initial thought, because then I can come off both of them on my wild card, because then they play Liverpool, then City in 15, 16. So then knowing that I'm wild carding in 15, it's, I'll probably, yeah, have a look. And there's no one else with two great fixtures. And I think by bringing in, say, bringing in Vardy, although they play Southampton away in 14, by bringing someone like that, I could potentially be looking at making, like, booking in a move out. Like, will Vardy play twice in 4 days? We don't know, or 3 days even. So, yeah, that's most likely moves going to be Antonio to Jimenez.
And Captain Ronaldo away to Chelsea.
No, my captain is going firmly on Mo Salah at home to Southampton. Yeah, that'll be that. I think other than that, like, the team that I set up with last week, I think that's pretty much going to be the team that I go with next week, barring any other injuries. Obviously, there's all the European fixtures, so yeah, be keeping an eye on Salah and Jota, Ronaldo, Chilwell, Rudiger, Cancelo. And, like, I'm not making any moves. Like, Cancelo goes and gets injured in Europe, because he will play. They're playing PSG. He will play. Yeah, if he goes and gets injured, then I do Cancelo to TAA. Simple move there. So yeah, I'm obviously not making any moves until Wednesday night after those Champions League games at the latest. I mean, Antonio, it doesn't matter if he gets injured on Thursday, to me. So we shall
Well,
see.
I'll be looking at rectifying the move that I should have made last week. So I'll be bringing in Jota and TAA for Diaz and Havertz. But then I also need to make another move to facilitate that because of the money, because I brought in
That'd be a
Fraser. So I'll
minus
be looking
eight.
at no minus four because I've robbed one free transfer because I had two last week. So it'd be for a minus four. So I've got two free transfers.
Oh, so you only
But
made one move last week.
I only made one move.
That
Yeah, I
feels
did
fair.
Brandhild to Fraser. I rolled. So I'll be doing TA and Jota in, but obviously subject to kind of Jota's injury, etc. And I'll be downgrading Armstrong to Dennis ideally, but that puts me 0.0. And I think in that time there will be mo like I think Dennis is due to rise and Jota's due to rise, so I probably will be priced out of that move. So we'll likely have to be Keenan Davis. And I think the reason, and I know you're against that because you're kind of like from you need backup in your midfielders, etc. Sorry, bench. But the reason why I want to do that is because next week, I want to do who was it? Fraser to Gallagher. And so I can't do Fraser to Gallagher without doing Armstrong to Davis. So if I can do Dennis, Armstrong to Dennis, then I'll do that. If I can't do that, I'm doing it to Davis and then Fraser to Gallagher. And then in game week 16, I'll be doing Rafinha to Bowen. So that's kind of my initial thoughts, which will mean I'll be having to keep Mbeumo for now. And Captain Salah.
Yeah, I mean, that's someone in my team that I think, yeah, if I did that Antonio to Raul move this week, then next week it'll be Mbeumo to someone, on a,
One week punt.
yeah, just a 1 week punt, whether it be Mount against Watford or someone like that, if I've still got money there, or even tripling up on Wolves and going Trincão. Midweek game, he could get a run out. Newcastle played Norwich. It's another interesting one, that could be worth targeting. Saka against Man United. it's like there's a few decent fixtures in that game week 14 to take a punt on. It could even be Rafinha if he's back. Rafinha against Palace. Yeah, it could be worth it. There's, yeah, plenty there. I mean, Norwich is a team that I'm keeping a little eye on now with Billy Gilmore. It looks like Dean Smith's come in, changed the formation, instantly just changed the formation, and brought Billy Gilmore back into the starting lineup. And he's still like, I think he went down. I think he's like 4.3 now.
Oh, wow.
Because he got some owners, but it was never enough to trigger a rise. And then because they all then went off of him, I think he went down. I think he might be 4.3 or 4.4.
Gilmore is 4.4.
4.4. So, yeah, if he's, I think someone like him, do Fraser down to Gilmore. Like he's going to be playing every minute of every game.
And he got an assist as well, didn't he?
Yeah. It's a Norwich side. He's not going to haul week in, week out. You'll pick up the odd return here and there from him. Knowing as well that the odd game that they do win, if he gets a return, he might also pick up bonus points as well. Because they're not going to be beating teams 3-4-5-0, are they? Well, unless Man United. He's someone that could be a nice little enabler now that he's starting again. I mean, he's in three of my fan team teams. I think he's in our fan team team. And
he is probably, in our fan team.
Yeah, and he's probably someone that we were looking a couple of weeks ago at moving out. And now it's like, if he's starting, if he's playing again, yeah, why not just having him there sitting third bench there to come on for a two-pointer or the odd five-pointer here and there when he picks up assists. So,
yeah.
One to keep an eye on.
Did you want to go through housekeeping now or should we do it on the live show on Thursday?
Well, I'm not sure whether we'll have a live show on Thursday. It depends how drunk I am.
All right, do you want to cover it now?
Ripe old age of 34 on Thursday.
Oh, yes, indeed.
So let's have a look at our mini league table. Little bit of movement in the top 10. We've seen Deirdre Kane, former leader of the mini league, move back into the top 10. 88 points she got this week. It was a great week. So puts her on 844. Rich Kirk down to ninth on 845. Greg Cook down to eighth on 849. This Stuart, he seems to always be in the top 10. He got 88 points this week as well, moved him up to seventh. Scott down to sixth with 853. Pontus Gundike, I always get that wrong. Pontus, please just message us with a video just telling us
pronunciation.
Pronounce your name, and then we won't murder it every week. So he's down to fifth on 855 points. Thomas Zovikas. 90 points for him this week. Another impressive score, 858. John Leaf, no movement from him in third on 870 points. James Twiddy, despite scoring 78 points, moves down to second on 883 points. Pipped by Tom Glover, who scored 2 points more, so he leapfrogs him to go a point ahead at the top of the league. So yeah, all to play for there. It's still, I mean, still 40 points in the top 10, but there's like that top three. There's only 14 points between that top three, so all to play for between those three. I don't know where you are. I think I made it into the top 100 this week.
I'm like 35, I think. Let me have a look. I think it was like 35 or 40 or I really don't know.
My target is top 20 in our top 20. Like in the podcast mainly. Got to finish top 20.
I'm 26th. Oh no, I'm not 26th. I'm 39th.
You're 39th. Yeah, I think I moved into the top 100 of it. But yeah, well done to Tom and James, John, the three of you leading the way in the race for, it's the inaugural season-long mini league, isn't it? So
It is indeed. Right. We might be with you on Thursday, but we'll let you know closer to the time. Thanks for tuning in. You can find us on Twitter, FPL_happy hour. We're also on Spotify, iTunes, and a number of our podcasts, and our YouTube channel, FPL Happy Hour. Please like, subscribe, and share, and all your retweets are appreciated. If we speak to you on Thursday, we'll speak to you on Thursday. If not, have a great game week. Take care.
Cheers, guys.